We hope you find this WILL podcast to be valuable. A $10 voluntary credit card contribution at willpledge.org will help us continue to make podcasts of our programs available. Thank you. And that address again is willpledge.org. WILLPLEDGE.ORG. Now here's your program.
Everything's gonna be all right, 'cause you're the lucky one.
That's the lucky one, Alison Krauss in Union Station. That was a Grammy winner for Best Country Performance back in 2002. Good morning. I'm George Hauenstein, sitting in today for David Inge on Focus 580. Today's show is pre-recorded, so we're not going to take any calls, unfortunately. Today's topic is the music and career of Alison Krauss. Alison is one of Champaign's more famous favorite daughters. She was born in Central Illinois, raised in Champaign. She entered the music industry at a very early age, playing local shows, traveling and playing bluegrass in her preteen years, and winning local talent contests by age 10. She signed a record deal at age 14 and has sold more than 12 million records in her career. She's won 26 Grammys, the most of any female singer in history. She's won or been nominated for countless country music awards, bluegrass awards. She's played the White House. She's a member of the Grand Ole Opry. And she's produced records for other high-profile artists like Alan Jackson and the Cox family, as well as having top 40 country hits with the likes of Brad Paisley and the late Keith Whitley. It's no understatement to say that Alison has changed the landscape, not only in bluegrass, but in country music and beyond. She's brought countless new fans to bluegrass, inspired more women to play instruments and sing bluegrass, and she's opened the gates for a lot of younger artists. She's a musical icon, and though she hasn't lived in Champaign for some time, she's got lots of fans here. She's in Nashville now when she's not touring around the country and around the world. Alison is in the recording studio currently and not available to take part in the interview, so we're going to talk about her behind her back. With me to talk about Alison Krauss's music and career is Ken Irwin, co-owner and co-founder of Rounder Records. Rounder Records is based in Burlington, Massachusetts, just outside of Boston, and it's the premier independent record label in the country. And in my mind, Ken Irwin is the guy most responsible for discovering Alison Krauss and bringing her music to a wider audience. Ken Irwin, great pleasure to have you with us today in the land of Alison Krauss on Focus 580 on WILL. Is it a fair statement that you are one of the guys most responsible for discovering Alison Krauss?
Yes, I usually don't think in those terms, but I was the person who brought her to the attention of my partners at Rounder. I had heard her voice on a tape we had gotten from a local band, local for you guys, called Classified Grass. Mm-hmm. And they were in that area. It was one of two bands that she was performing with at the time, Classified Grass and Union Station. Not the Union Station that we know today, but they did borrow the name. And it was a cassette, and Alison was playing fiddle and singing harmony until the fourth song. And I heard her voice and was just struck. I don't think I had really heard any voice quite like it, and especially not in the bluegrass field.
How old was she at that time when you first heard her?
When I first heard her, she was 13.
Mm-hmm. And her band, you met Union Station, the band, one of the bands she was in at that time, and the band that she still fronts to this day, was actually formed by John Pinnell, another then Champaign, Illinois resident and U of I grad, who asked her to join the band. And John was just here in Champaign-Urbana as part of Charlie Sizemore's band. He's a very talented artist and writer himself.
And a great guy, too.
Yeah.
He's worked with Allison since way back then, way before we knew her. And, you know, in terms of discovery, he was certainly involved with the process as well.
So you came to become acquainted with her through that band, but how did you get wind of her before that, that brought you out to actually to see her live or to listen to her cassette?
Well, it was on a demo. It was an unsolicited demo that just came in. I think I was listening to about 30 or 40 demos that day. I was sitting on top of my garage and had a little notepad with me and was writing letters of back to the people who had sent in the packages saying yay, nay, or send me some more material. And I heard Allison, and, you know, I guess it was just one of those lucky days when I got to cut four. These days, that might not happen quite as much, but it was a very nice day, and I was very relaxed, and it was nice hearing some good bluegrass. And so that was no one had written us a letter, and I hadn't heard anything about her before hearing her voice.
Who sent you the tape? You say it was unsolicited, but did John send it, or?
No, it wasn't Union Station. It was Classified Grass, the other band that she was playing with. And it was sent by the manager, who was the mother of the mandolin player in Classified Grass.
And then how long before you actually got to see and hear her in person?
Well, it took a while. First thing I did was to follow up and speak to the manager, and she referred me to Dave Samuelson, who is also an Illinois person. I used to run Puritan Records and has written lots of liner notes and been involved with a festival in Indiana. And she said that he would be a good reference. And I got in touch with Dave, and he said, yeah, she can be anything she wants. She can be Jovanetti or Stefan Grappelli. But he didn't talk that much about her vocals. It was mainly about her fiddling. And I got back in touch with the manager, and well, I think Dave actually gave me her phone number, and I called up and actually spoke to Allison at all of 13 years old and asked for some more material that featured her, because the tape that was sent only had the one song. And within a week, I had gotten a tape of, I think it was five more songs or six more songs. I think almost all of them, if not all, were written by John Pinnell. And again, I was really struck by the singing, but also by John's songs, which were quite different, very well written, still within the bluegrass mold, but stretching a little bit compared to what was being done at the time.
And you were not familiar with John Pinnell at that point, right?
No, that was my first introduction.
And all of 13 at that point, when you called her and she answered the phone, was she excited or, you know, cavalier as a 13-year-old can be? Or how did she react to getting a call from President of Rounder Records?
Well, she was very, I think, very, very humble, very mature, discussed everything that I asked, and as I mentioned, I asked for more material, and she said that she would get some to me, and I was frankly shocked that I got it within a week. For those who don't know, Allison has a very, very supportive family, and her parents took this a little bit more seriously than Allison did and jumped right in and got the band into the studio and sent along the new songs.
And from there, she not too long thereafter was signed by you, but what was the process in between you receiving the four or five additional tunes and actually deciding to offer her a recording contract?
Well, after getting the new songs, I played them for a few people in the company. For a few people whose judgment I respected, who were friends but not in the company, but were knowledgeable about bluegrass, and everybody really liked her. And I, you know, it was a time that was very different when you could take chances, and we could take a chance on an artist who didn't really have her own band, didn't have management, didn't have booking. That probably wouldn't happen today.
I think her first album, as I recall, was an Alison Krauss album, not a band album, and she was flanked by some of the real great A-team acoustic players, Tony Trischka and Sam Bush and others. It was a real good showcase of her talent. But soon thereafter, she recorded an Alison Krauss and Union Station band. But she was still in her teens. How do you deal with a band leader who is, you know, so young?
Well, we dealt somewhat with Alison, a little bit with her parents, mm-hmm. but the demands were not as great as they are today in terms of touring. The bluegrass world is a fairly small one in terms of the number of publications, the number of record companies, the number of writers who are really aware, the number of DJs. It's a community,
mm-hmm.
and getting the word out there about a new talent is a lot easier than it might be in more crowded genres of music.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But one of the things we did before recording the record was we arranged to meet Alison in Nashville, and I called up a number of musicians who I respected, and I know that she did, and had a get-together, sort of a jam session over at Bela Fleck house. And Jerry Douglas came over, Russ Barenberg, I think Sam Bush, and I'm sort of amazed that happened.
Was this
I don't know if I would have dared to do that today.
Was this down in Nashville, or where was this?
Yeah, this was in Nashville.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And this was, I believe, the very first week that we met her. We met her I think we met her actually backstage at the Grand Ole Opry, and then signed the contract at a friend of mine's house out in Goodlettsville.
Mm-hmm. Without getting into sensitive areas, what is the requirement of a bluegrass artist when they sign a contract? Is it X number of albums? Is it that they will tour X number of days? Or what does a contract entail with a bluegrass artist on your label?
The main part of the contract is to provide a recording. Usually one recording plus option records, meaning mm-hmm. that they will record more than the one record. There usually isn't a stipulation about number of days that they'll be on the road mm-hmm. or anything along those lines. And in fact, we initially encourage Alison to stay in school,
mm-hmm.
and she tried for a little while, but she was just too bitten by the music to stay in. She just wanted to be doing it and doing it then.
Do you remember who was in her band Union State, or who was in the band Union Station at that time, besides John Pinnell?
I don't really. I can picture everybody, and we've been in touch with a few of them. I'll look that up. We have to. Yeah.
One of the things that when Alison Krauss comes up that people talk about a lot and pretty consistently is her maturity and her level-headedness. And was that something that struck you in the teen years?
Well, throughout our discussions, I thought that I was talking to someone probably 5 or 10 years older
mm-hmm.
than she was. And that was the case pretty much until the time that we were going to tell her that we were going to record her. Shortly before, after we had decided to record her, but I hadn't told her, I ran into the person who books the Newport Folk Festival.
Mm-hmm.
And we were talking, and I told, you know, he said, well, what's new, and, you know, any new ideas of people that that I should know about, and I mentioned Allison. And he said that he had seen her at the Kentucky Fried Chicken Festival, and her band had won first prize, and that he was thinking of having them at Newport.
Mm-hmm.
And so when I called up Allison, I said, well, I have two things to tell you. And one is you're going to be invited to the Newport Folk Festival. And she said, what's that? And so I told her it was the most prestigious folk festival in the United States. And, you know, she said, oh, great. And then I said, and the second is, you know, we'd like to do a record with you. And that was the first time that the kid and her came out, or the mm-hmm. child. And she was really excited. And she says that she said, mother, mother, and went to tell her the word. And that was really the first time we saw the child.
Mm-hmm.
But other than that, all of the business dealings, all the conversations, she was extremely mature, handled it very, very professionally, and was a delight to deal with, as she is now.
What did you see as her potential in the early days? Were you thinking more than a year or two out, did you have thoughts about her long-term potential, whether it's with Rounder or just in general as an artist? What did you see as her potential back in the early days?
I really wasn't thinking of long-term potential at all. I just felt that I really loved her voice, and that between the repertoire and her voice, that it was something fresh, and there really hadn't been many young women in the bluegrass field. And it just, I just felt that there was an opening for her, an opportunity for her to do well. But, you know, well back then might have been 10,000 copies.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe that the first record sold 7,500 before the second record came out.
Mm.
So it was a fairly slow build. And I remember meeting quite a bit of resistance from talent buyers. I would tell them about Allison and Union Station, and I said, you know, she's really good, and I know that you don't book many women, but, you know, she's really good, and I think you'll be pleased if you book her. And it was really an uphill battle for many people at that point. It just, you know, women and bluegrass just weren't looked at in the same way that they are now.
When I think of about the impact that Allison has had on bluegrass and music in general, of course she has brought a lot of new fans to the music, but for me the impact seems to be quite a bit that she has opened the doors and made it even possible for women, young women, and young men and women to play an instrument and get in front of an audience. And she's made that a little bit more of a mainstream thing than I think it used to be.
Yeah, the majority of the women who were playing bluegrass professionally at the time were guitar players or bass players. There weren't that many who were playing lead instruments, and especially on the level that Allison was.
Mm-hmm. And she's been with Rounder since the beginning, and she is living in Nashville now. How often are you in touch with Allison?
I'm not as in touch as I had been mm-hmm. earlier on. She has a manager who we deal with about most matters. There are times when I'm in Nashville that we'll get together, but there isn't the same need to be in touch about every little thing. She has a booking agent, mm-hmm. a manager, a whole team around her now. So it's not as necessary for us to deal with her as an artist. And when I deal with her now, it's usually much more as a friend rather than as a part of a record company.
Mm-hmm. Why do you think she is so popular? Her style of music has evolved a little bit over the years. You go to an Alison concert, or you buy an Alison Krauss CD or listen to one of her songs, and it's a good bet it's not going to be a traditional bluegrass tune. And I think that she has really, because she is not pigeon, she doesn't keep to one particular genre of music all the time, that she has been able to attract new fans to the music. Why do you think, Ken, she is so popular these days?
Well, firstly, she has an incredible voice,
mm-hmm.
and she's also a wonderful singer. I mean, you start with the voice, and then you learn how to use it, and the combination is just wonderful on the one hand and very accessible. A lot of the people whose music she really liked, one of her early favorites was Ralph Stanley,
mm-hmm.
and he just doesn't have the kind of voice that is easily accessible to a broad range of people, where Alison has fans that are bluegrass fans, folk music, pop. With her recordings with Robert Plant, she's picked up people who were mainly rock fans. So it's she, both in her choice of material and the people that she sung with over the years, just continues to broaden her audience.
A question you've probably been asked a million times over the years: why does she stay with Rounder Records as opposed to going to a bigger record label?
Well, she stated a number of times that if it's not broke, don't fix it,
mm-hmm.
and that things have gone very well. She knows all of the people at Rounder and has for her entire recording life. The same owners are the people who owned the company back when she started. And that's often not the case with major labels. There's very often a large turnover. She's had artistic freedom since, I guess, probably the second or third record. And as she says, that's been great for her because she's been able to learn so much from her own mistakes. Whereas if she had somebody else telling her what to do, she wouldn't have had the same kind of growth as an artist and a producer. And there's a loyalty factor there that we were interested back when nobody else was. And she knows that she's a priority at the label and that we understand her music and the way she works. And we've gone with her on her various adventures as she, does different types of music. We've supported her as an artist and as a person. And just in general, it's a very good fit and has been very successful for both of us.
It's we're talking. My guest today is Ken Irwin, president and one of the co-founders of Rounder Records. in Burlington, Massachusetts. And the topic today is Alison Krauss, the career and the music of Alison Krauss. I'm George Hauenstein, sitting in for David Inge today. Ken, you talked about artistic freedom. I just wanted to explore that a little bit more. Does she come to you when a project is on the horizon, say, I want to do it this way, and then you have a little input, and or does she, you do, are you just happy to go with whatever she wants to do?
For the most part, she has carte blanche.
Mm-hmm.
You know, she's just proven herself to make great recordings, and she has great sensitivity, always uses great musicians who understand the songs that are sensitive, and she's picked great material, and she can do pretty much what she wants. We have that kind of trust in her. Certainly when she was, doing the project with Robert Plant, you know, there was a discussion about that beforehand. But, you know, if she were to be going in on a new Union Station record, we would probably hear the music when it was done.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned one of the reasons for her success, her great voice, but also her choice of material. And I've always thought that she had a real terrific knack for finding and showcasing really strong songwriters, people that maybe were below the radar of the major labels, people like Julie Lee or Robert Lee Castleman or Sidney Cox or Mark Simas or John Pinnell. And then also Ron Block, her longtime banjo and guitar player, is a tremendous writer of gospel and spiritual numbers. And she very often includes one or two of Ron's gospel songs on her records. And in her liner notes, she talks about how Ron Block's songs can change your life. Ron really is a tremendous writer. What do you think accounts for her knack for finding great songs and great songwriters?
I think she looks for songs that'll move her, that will have an emotional impact on her. And in the same way that we felt that if we liked Alison singing, that other people will, that's the way she looks on songs. If she finds a song that moves her, that makes her really feel inside, she feels that others will probably feel it, and also that she needs to do that in order to really put her best into singing those songs. You know, she has to really feel it. But, you know, she listens to hundreds and hundreds of songs. She really, really searches out, and she keeps lists, and she, you know, once she's recorded a song by an artist, she'll very often be back in touch and saying, do you have anything new? And she feels the writers are such an important part of what she does. And she works with them. Every once in a while, she'll find a song, and she really likes it, except for a certain part. And she'll contact the writer and discuss it and, you know, say what it is that just doesn't strike it for her. And more often than not, the writer will agree and work with her on it. But it's, you know, she needs to have the song be something that she can believe in and that she can in order to be able to do her best job on it.
One of the songs that I know from seeing her in concert a number of times that she really does believe in is a Ron Block song. It's called There Is a Reason, and we're going to give that a listen now, and we'll come back right after this with more from Ken Irwin of Rhonda Records.
Isn't any wonder to save me from my sins. Heaven is the place I call my home. But I keep on getting caught up in this world I'm living in. And your voice, it sometimes fades before I.
You're listening to Focus 580 on WILL, Illinois Public Media. My name's George Hauenstein, sitting in this morning for David Inge, and proud to have as my guest Ken Irwin, co-owner and co-founder of Rounder Records in Burlington, Massachusetts. And Rounder Records, among other things, is the record label, the current record label and the longtime record label of Alison Krauss. And Ken, I wanted to talk about briefly the most recent Alison project on Rounder, the Raising Sand project with Robert Plant. Is that your biggest selling record to date?
No, actually, the best selling record to date was Alison's compilation from 1995.
All right,
which had When You Said Nothing at All as the big hit. That's Alison's biggest hit to date.
The Raising Sand album certainly did pretty well, and is still doing well.
If it had come out, 10 years later, 10 years earlier, when there were more record stores around and before file sharing and various other technological changes, that it would have sold a lot more.
Mm-hmm.
We had heard that there were in the week following the Grammy wins for Raising Sand, there were reportedly 1.2 illegal downloads of Raising Sand.
Mm-hmm. How did that whole project come about that Alison would collaborate with Robert Plant?
A friend of Robert's suggested that that he might sound really good with Allison, and mentioned it to Robert. And he called up Allison one night and introduced himself, and they talked for a little while. But Allison had just put her son to sleep and was trying to talk really quietly. And eventually they just ended the conversation without any resolution, and Allison was sort of kicking herself afterwards. And then Robert called back, I guess it was a few months later, and said he had been asked to sing at the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame when they were doing the induction of Lead Belly to the hall, and asked if Allison would come up and sing with him. And she went up, and they sang together and got along really well. And they both felt that there was some potential for singing together, and got together and did what was going to be three or four cuts just to see how it would go across. And they both really enjoyed it and decided to continue on with the project.
And they've spent the last year and longer touring the album. Is there a plan to do another one?
There are discussions, but nothing firm at this point.
Her band Union Station, the current iteration with Dan Tominski, Jerry Douglas, Ron Block, and Barry Bales, they've been together for a long time. Are they regrouping anytime soon, or will it be a new iteration of Union Station?
Well, it looks like the Union Station is still together as a unit. They've all gone and done their side things and have been touring and having a lot of fun doing their separate projects. And it's likely that they'll get back and record again at some point.
What keeps a band together so long? The last band change, I think, was when Adam Steffi left, and that was in the late 90s. And they've been together for an awfully long time. What keeps a band together like that, particularly in a world of bluegrass, which is not the highest paying genre of music, although Allison probably does as well as anybody?
Well, I think there's a very strong feeling of shared music and the quality of the music. The people in the band tend to get along well. They do quite well, certainly in terms of the bluegrass world, but I think in terms of other music, they do well financially. And artistically, it's great. They still really enjoy each other's playing. You can still see people surprising other members of the band with solos. And they've accomplished a lot, and they realize that. And they've had the rare opportunity to make great music, do the touring that they want, but also to have time off, also to do side projects. And I think it's probably very rewarding being in that band.
Mm-hmm. Well, what's the future hold for Allison? I know you said before the interview you'd rather not talk too much about the future, but does she have any upcoming projects that are beyond the discussion stage? Is there a new Union Station band album in the future?
Well, she'll probably record with Union Station, and hopefully with Robert, and I'm sure she'll do other things as well. I mean, she just, she loves the studio, and I think misses it when she's not there. But she also loves touring, and she also loves to spend time with family and friends. So it's, she just tries to fit it all in.
Mm-hmm. But before we let you go, Ken, I wanted to switch gears a little bit and ask you a couple questions about your record label, Rounder Records. You're one of three co-founders and co-owners. How did Rounder come about?
It was pretty much typical, you know, the way most companies start. I was hitchhiking down in Virginia and got picked up by a couple and invited me to spend the night. And turned out he had started a record company. And I came back from the trip and I spoke to my roommate and I said, "Hey, Bill, this guy started a record company and he doesn't know any graphic designers and we do. And he didn't know anybody who wrote liner notes, and we know all these ethnomusicologists and folklorists. You know, why don't we start a record company?" And so we did.
And that was back in 1970-ish?
Yep. Yeah, we're going, next year we're going to be celebrating our 40th anniversary.
How have you been able to keep Rounder what it is today? It's certainly the premier label in bluegrass music, and I would argue one of the, if not the premier, independent record label in the country. How have you been able to keep it there with all the changes in the music industry and economic ups and downs and that kind of thing?
Well, we've always tried to be smart about what we did. We never have had real excesses in the way that we run the label. We've always tried to make sure that every record would at least break even and hopefully make money. And we've worked closely with most of our artists and and tried to make things work as best we can. It's been, a lot of work and a lot of love for the music and a great staff who shares our passion for the music and the artists.
The roster of current and former Rounder artists is like a who's who of roots music, and I know I'll leave out a big name or two, but of course, in addition to Alison Krauss, George Thorogood, Bruce Coburn, Bela Fleck, Natalie McMaster, Madeline Peyrou, among others who either are on the label now or have been on the label in the past. And I know it's hard to predict the future, but what's next for Rounder Records? You seem to have been able to navigate and anticipate trends. As a matter of fact, as I was doing research on Rounder, I came across a fact that I found kind of interesting, that you were one of the first, if not the first, record label to become involved with in compact discs back in 1985. Is that true?
Yeah, we were amongst the very first. The first CDs that that we had made were made in Japan, because the major labels pretty much dominated the the very, very few plants that were making CDs at the time. And I remember a couple of our friendly competitive labels were saying, "Oh, the CD thing's just a fad," and and didn't really jump into it. But we felt at the time that people were going to be buying CD players, and so we tried to have one record of each of the genres we worked with available. So if somebody liked blues, there'd be a blues record, and if someone liked bluegrass, there'd be a bluegrass record, and a Cajun record, and a folk record, and reggae, just trying to get them. And that was the first batch that we did, and said almost all those, I think, were made in Japan, until there were enough plants in the States to start doing independent music.
Are there any projects in the immediate future on Rounder that you're particularly excited about?
Well, I'm always excited about the new James Hand records. He's one of my favorites, a great real country singer, not what most people refer to as country these days. And
he's
new
from
Claire
Texas,
Lynch
by
record.
The way. Mm-hmm.
And Mary Chapin Carpenter is in the studio working on her second record for Rounder. So there are always a bunch of interesting projects coming along, and it's sometimes hard to keep up, because we're always working in advance on projects that probably won't come out for 5 or 6 months.
Are you on the road a lot searching for new talent or trying to discover the next Alison Krauss, if you will, or the next new artist that you can add to Rounder?
I don't think I'm on the road quite as much as I used to be. I go to a number of conferences, to Folk Alliance, which is usually in Memphis, and South by Southwest in Austin, Texas, and the World of Bluegrass, IBMA's conference in Nashville.
That's just in a couple of weeks, isn't it?
I leave on Sunday, day after tomorrow. Of course, probably won't be when
day
the radio
before
show
yesterday.
Goes on. But the award show for IBMA this year is on October 1st, so it is coming right up.
And a lot of Rounder artists up for nominations. As I mentioned earlier, Rounder is the premier bluegrass label, and artists like Doyle Lawson and Quicksilver and Rhonda Vincent and Daly and Vincent, among others, are up for IBMA awards, are they not this year?
They are, and the Steel Drivers. Mm-hmm. Steel Drivers have a new record that's going to be coming out early next year, and Joe Diffie, a very successful country artist over the years, is doing a bluegrass record. It's his first bluegrass record under his own name, though he was in a group that did three bluegrass records for, I think they were all for Ridge Runner back before his country career started.
Well, Ken Irwin, thank you so very much. Ken Irwin, again, is the co-founder and co-owner of Rounder Records in just outside of Boston, Massachusetts, the record label for Alison Krauss and Union Station and so many other artists who are household names and many who aren't but are still putting out great music. And you mentioned, Ken, the song that Alison did in 1995, When You Say Nothing at All, and I'm going to put that on in just a minute, but maybe you could talk a little bit about that, because that was, it seems to me, I remember it was recorded a couple of times, or she had two versions of it, one with the late Keith Whitley and then one with Union Station. Am I remembering right?
Sort of. the version with Keith was never authorized.
Oh.
I think the original version was certainly the Union Station version, mm-hmm. and then I believe a disc jockey put together a version which had Alison and Robert swapping verses and not quite singing harmony, but singing at the same time,
mm-hmm.
and they sent it to to RCA, which had been Keith's record label,
and Keith had died at the time. He was dead at the time.
The Alison's version was actually initially recorded for a tribute to Keith Whitley,
mm-hmm.
and RCA approached Alison with the idea of issuing the doctored version. And Alison respectfully declined, saying that if Keith were alive and they could, there was a possibility of recording it together, that would be a different story. But she just didn't feel this was appropriate. And yet somehow copies of the version with Keith Whitley leaked out to a lot of radio stations and got quite a bit of play, even though it had never been authorized.
Hmm. Well, we're going to play the Alison Krauss and Union Station version from the live album, and I want to say thank you again, Ken Irwin from Rounder Records. I appreciate the time.
Well, thank you, and it's always a pleasure to talk about Alison and Bluegrass, and it's good to speak to you again. It's been a while since you were back here in Boston, and I hope you're enjoying it out there in Champaign.
Well, thanks so much. Ken Irwin of Rounder Records. Here's Alison Krauss and When You Say Nothing at All.
It's amazing how you can speak right to my heart. you say it. Please.